Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is the pianist Lang Lang. A child prodigy and classical music phenomenon, his talent and showmanship have earned him worldwide renown, playing for presidents, royalty, and a global audience of 4.5 billion at the opening of the Beijing Olympics. The drama he brings to the concert stage is matched by the story of his early life in China. Amid the grim, stinking slums of the country's capital, his father demanded a punishing degree of dedication from his only child, determined he would be the number one pianist in China. Lang Lang says, "I was bold. Even at the age of 5, the determination to win was in my blood. It shaped my dreams at night and drove my discipline during the day." You've now, Lang Lang, reached the grand old age of 28. How's your competitive spirit these days?
I think my competitor is actually myself, and if the focus is on the music, then I think everything will come. But obviously, when I was 5, I thought there is a world number one in piano playing, but then I realized that's a fairy tale.
I see. Can you give me a snapshot of typically how many performances you would give in a year?
Yeah, I actually gave 125 concerts plus 15 charity concerts a year. So overall, I'm playing around 140.
How much time do you spend in airports?
Every second day, I would say. Yeah, for me, airport is like a bus station. You know, I mean, people take a bus to work and I take plane to work. It's the same thing. And I'm used to this kind of life, so for me, it's all right. Or talking to my mom. She's actually traveling with me, so.
Okay. I heard you say of your performance at the 2008 Beijing Olympics opening ceremony that sitting there in the middle of the bird's nest at your piano was like, you used this wonderful phrase, you said it was like being in the universe.
Yes.
Explain a little bit more of that to me.
It was a real special night. 20,000 performers that night, you know, performing. And I remember I need to babysit the little girl who's playing next to me. Yeah, and she's so cute. And
she was how old?
She's like 5 years old. And she asked me, "When can I go home? Can I get off the bench? Can I dance a little bit?" I said, no. Your job is to sit with me, unfortunately, but sit with me and playing some music. I need to calm her down.
I mean, a global audience of 4.5 billion. You know, the massed ranks of not just the politicians from your own country, but all around the world, the pressure to get it right could never have been greater. How did you feel at that moment?
I actually didn't really think about 4 billion people when I was performing. But I remember the first rehearsal. I had a total, you know, goosebumps. I was so overwhelmed. And it's a city in Beijing, which I kind of grew up and had a lot of good memories and also a lot of disappointment memories. So it's a place that I have a lot of emotion for. And to go on to this stage is actually the biggest stage ever for me. So it's just really, really quite special.
We will talk a lot about those memories, I hope, a little bit later. Let's start with some music then, Lang Lang. Tell me about the first disc that we're going to hear today and why you've chosen it.
I'm actually choosing my childhood musical icon, Michael Jackson, and his biggest hit, Thriller. It's quite interesting. It's really the most exciting track I ever know. But in the same time, this track is actually happened in 1982, which is the year I was born.
You're making us all feel old. Let's hear it, Thriller by Michael Jackson.
You're paralyzed, 'cause this is
That was Michael Jackson, of course, and Thriller. I was wondering, Lang Lang, you were talking before about this, that piece of music being released the very year you were born, 1982. Mm-hmm. Did you hear that when you were a little boy in China?
I did listen at elementary school.
Right.
Because all my classmates are quite crazy about Michael Jackson.
Okay. When did you first sit down at a piano and play?
I sit down at the piano just for fun. I mean, when I was 2.5, you know, but it doesn't mean anything. I just sit down and then...
There was a piano at home, wasn't
there? Yes, my parents bought one. They loved it. And during the Cultural Revolution, there's no chance to study classical music. So right after the revolution, when my parents married, in the very beginning of the 80s, first thing they bought was a piano.
Right.
They told me that they spent 6 months of their salary
right.
to buy the first piano.
And by the time you were, let's say, you know, 5, 6, you were playing properly by then?
Yes, I actually started study when I was 3.5.
To study?
Yeah, to study, yeah.
Studying meant what at 3.5?
Study Bach, study the exercise book and scales and, yeah.
Have your parents spoken to you, I imagine they must surely have, about realising that this was not just an ordinary little 3.5-year-old tinkling away at the piano, that here was a 3.5-year-old who was able to express himself in such an extraordinary way?
I mean, in the beginning, probably they just thought that I'm, you know, play for fun. But then at 5, I played my first recital. And that moment, I think my parents and also the teacher, people realize that I have something special to share on stage.
How many people were you playing to?
800. It was it's a, like kind of a young pioneers concert hall, you know, because that time is still quite early stage into a Chinese system.
This is only a matter of maybe even just a decade after the end of the Cultural Revolution.
Yeah, this is just, let's say, the Cultural Revolution ended in 76. So this is like a bit over 10 years.
Given that most parents of 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds have trouble getting them even to hanging their coat up, how did your parents get you to actually sit down and practice? Were you resistant to that, or did they have to encourage you?
They don't really need to push me so hard, because in the beginning, I thought piano is like a toy. And also, in the beginning, you know, your parents not pushing you to practice so much in the beginning.
In the beginning.
Yeah, later, yes, but in the beginning, it's like, you know, kind of like play a toy, play Transformers, play games, and play piano, almost like that.
So when you are 5, how many hours a day? Would it have been an hour a day you would have been playing piano more than that?
When I was 5, 3 hours, I would say, three hours practice.
I said in the introduction that there was this idea that was you were to be the number one pianist in China. Can you remember what age you were when that phrase was first used?
5. After the recital I played.
Who said that to you?
My parents. Particularly my father, actually. Yeah.
Much more to come. For now, though, let's hear some beautiful piano music. Tell us what we're going to hear next.
Yeah, we're going to hear Chopin's Waltz in D-flat major. This is played by the great Arthur Rubinstein. This is one of the most famous waltz, and this is the one that actually I played in the first recital. Thank you.
Chopin's waltz in D-flat major, known, of course, as the Minute Waltz, played there by Arthur Rubinstein. You were saying, Lang Lang, that that memorably was your first recital. That was one of the pieces that you played. And you said that you and your father talked about this idea of being the number one pianist in China. It was an intense relationship from the beginning, was it?
In the very beginning, it was okay, actually. The relationship became pretty tough when my mom stayed at home and my father quit his job to be with me in Beijing to prepare to take audition to the best conservatory in China. At that time, it became very intensive.
Your parents were artistic people themselves, mm-hmm. your father being the leader of the local orchestra. Mm-hmm. What about your mother?
My mom actually loves music. When she was very young, yeah, she wanted to be a musician, but of course, I mean, in the end, she turns to have a decent job, but it's nothing exciting and nothing musical.
Did you get a sense that in a way you were sort of expressing their artistic passions, that these were two people who very much had to more than knuckle down? You know, they absolutely had their paths worked out for them by the community and the time that they lived in, but you could express yourself musically and artistically.
Yeah, I mean, my parents had a huge dream, but that generation of people, I think many of them just achieved their dream in a halfway, you know, because the revolution really, you know, that's disturbed.
Yes.
After the reforms time, which is after 1979, we are actually only allowed to have one kid, so yeah. Only child generation. So therefore, I mean, I felt in my generation that the parents put a lot of pressure on the kid because, first of all, many of them didn't achieve their dream. And then now they have a chance, but only one chance. One kid only. So you can imagine it's a very unusual time. But in the other hand, if I have, let's say, four siblings like my mom or, like, five siblings like my father, then I don't think I will have the chance to study piano, because that's involved with a lot of money and efforts and education and focus. So in a way, it worked for me.
It certainly did. I want to ask you a little bit more later about mm-hmm. your journey to Beijing and leaving mm-hmm. your mother. That happened mm-hmm. when you were around about nine.
Nine, yeah.
There's something now in China, I understand, called the Lang Lang effect, which is that there are estimated to be more than 35 million young Chinese piano players. How are you treated by those young piano players when you go home? Are you able to walk down the streets?
I mean, seriously, piano become some real phenomenon in mm-hmm. China. I don't know whether it's to do with me or not, but piano became the number one instrument. Of course, I can walk to the street without security, but I mean, I got a lot of picture taken.
Right.
But that's actually nice. When I go out for a coffee or something, people stop and then take a picture or asking for autograph. And sometimes I got mobbed. But it's all feel good, because if classical musicians can also be loved by the general public, it's a great thing.
Okay, let's have some more music then. We're on disc number 3 now. What are we going to hear?
Now we're going to listen to my favorite singer, Luciano Pavarotti, and his most famous song, Sola Mia. This one really inspired me to start listening to classical operas. And Pavarotti is the first classical tenor to reach out to millions of people.
Che bella cosa, una giornata sole, un'aria serena dopo una tempesta. Un'aria fresca pare già una festa. Che bella cosa la giornata e sole. Anna, tu sei più bella in me. Oh sole mio, stai ne pronte a te. Sei ne fronte a te.
Luciano Pavarotti and O Sole Mio, My Son. So, Lang Lang, you say you were 9 then when you moved from the family home in Shenyang, that's just northeast of Beijing,
yes,
to Beijing itself. You moved with your father, and the purpose there was to get you into the conservatory.
Yes. I remember the first day I got so depressed because we moved into a real small and very poor and dirty neighborhood. I think 6 families share one toilet.
Is it true that your father would get up at 5 in the morning and go to this communal toilet area and lock himself in order that when you woke a couple of hours later, you didn't have to queue to use the bathroom? Is that a true story?
Yeah, not every morning, but sometimes, yes, it is. Most neighbors understood, but some neighbors hate it. You know,
this was to do then about the management of your time, that you could not spend an hour queuing because that was time that you could be practicing, was that
right,
it?
Right, right,
yeah. I mean, there are things that I've read that sometimes seem difficult to believe. Did he also, when you were practicing, because the flat that you lived in was so cold, is it true that he got into bed to warm your bed? And
Yes, that's true, yeah.
What do you make of that?
I think that that's father's love. I think that's, that really shows his love for me and his support, you know, as a father. I got very emotional when I remember those things.
Yeah.
But in the same time, my father was very tough, you know, so it was like real love and hate relationship.
This is a very close and difficult thing, isn't it? Because on the one hand, there is this terrific sacrifice by both of your parents, because your mother is kissing goodbye her only child, only 9 years old, and your father is living in this dump in Beijing.
And quit his good job.
Yeah, and quit his good job. Mm-hmm. And yet, at the same time, the pressure he's placing on you is immense. This is that's a complex mixture.
Yeah, it's pretty extreme, I would say. Yes.
Yeah. How did you deal with... I mean, now, of course, you're more mature. You're 28. You have this soaring career. You can see it with a degree of perspective. At the time, when you were a 9-10-year-old boy, how did it feel?
In the beginning, it was very bad. I mean, in the beginning, I started missing home, missing my friends, especially my mother. That's the really painful part. I mean, so that's why, you know, I think now these days I need my mom all the time, you know, to be with me. It's just because my heart, it was really hurting when I was separated from my mom. And at school, it was not easy also, you know, people looking down at me from the countryside and pretty poor and kind of practice piano all the time, kind of a weird kid. Really, the worst was not those things. The worst was I had a piano teacher, but every class, basically, she said that you shouldn't play piano because you're not good. You're simply no talent. I mean, you will never make it. And then after 6 months, she totally kicked me out.
What did your father do?
He went crazy, went nuts, of course. And
nuts at you or nuts at her?
Not really to her, because he knows that she's a professor at conservatory. If he's too hard on her, that will damage my future. So he was hard on me.
What form did that take? What did he do?
I mean, one day he got so mad and he asked me to jump the building and to not leave anymore. And that was...
To jump off of the balcony?
Yeah, we had this big fight. And then I also went nuts. I started, you know, trying to destroy my own hands, you know, on the walls. And somehow we didn't talk for a long time.
You didn't talk and you didn't play?
No, I stopped playing. Because I hated piano at that time.
To be beating the wall, to be destroying your own hands as a pianist is the most self-destructive thing you can do.
Right, that's the worst thing you can do, I think.
Yeah.
And I was 9. I mean, that was scary, seriously. Yeah. Thank God I didn't really do it, you know. I mean, I did, but I mean, my father stopped me. I mean, thank God I didn't jump the building, and thank God he stopped me, you know.
Is it true he gave you some pills at the same
time? Yeah, also, in the same time, so. But I didn't do it.
This is such an extreme situation. I'm wondering, was your father's reaction, was it out of anger? Was it out of shame?
Shame, I would say.
It was shame.
Yeah. Yeah.
That he had uprooted the family.
Right.
That you would have to go back home and say you didn't get into the conservatory.
Right.
Right. Let's have some more music now, Lang Lang. We are on track number 4 now.
Yes.
What are we going to hear?
This is one of the world's most beautiful piano concertos. It's the Chopin Piano Concerto. Number 1, second movement, and this is played by the wonderful Murray Paraya with the Israel Philharmonic, conducted by my favorite conductor, Zubi Mehta.
Mari Pariah playing part of the second movement of Chopin's Piano Concerto No. 1 with the Israel Philharmonic Orchestra conducted by Zubin Mehta. And you said going into that Lang Lang that Zubin Mehta is your favorite conductor.
Yes.
Why is that?
First of all, I really admire his art, but also the whole family I'm very close with. His son and his brother. Actually, his brother, Zaramit, was actually one of the person who discovered me when I was studying in America.
When you say discovered, you explain that. What do you mean discovered you? How did that happen and what happened?
In order to have a career breaking ground, you need to have some chance to play in a very important concert. And his brother, Zaran, was the one who gave me the first chance to play together with Christoph Eschenbach at Chicago's Ravinia Festival in 1999. So it was really, really the moment.
And you stepped in to that concert with just a matter of a few hours' notice. I mean, how did it actually happen? Take us through the series of events.
Yeah, I was taking audition. And then after I played the audition, and Zaran Mehta came to me and said, "Do you have a concerto that you think you can play right away?" I said, "Oh, maybe Tchaikovsky concerto." And then I went back to Philadelphia, where I study. The day after, in the morning, I got a call from Ravinia Festival. Said, "Oh, come back, step in. Isaac Stern is waiting for you for your first rehearsal."
And you were how old?
17, just turned. So that was my lucky break.
And the concert that night, it would be fair to say it went well.
It went more than well. it was a really good one.
It was a really good one. Yeah. I'm very interested in what happened after the concert, because you were then asked to give a very private performance. Tell me about that.
Right, and then afterward, both Christoph and Zaran asked me, "Oh, it seems like you're pretty high tonight. Do you have something else to play?" I got a little hyper that night, so I was like, "Oh, yeah, what do you want?" And then they said, "Do you play Bach?" I said, "Yeah, I do play Bach." And they say, "Come on, let's play some Goldberg variation." So I remember they came back to the concert hall after the party, and I started to play the whole night.
And let's just be clear about this. You're not sitting there with the sheet music in front of you.
Didn't prepare, so I just start playing. I don't know how well I played. I only remember a little bit, but it was a special night. Let's put it this way.
You say night. What time in the morning did you finish your performance?
I think almost 3:30 a.m. Yeah.
I mean, this is the moment of a lifetime. This is the moment when everything changes for you, literally, in that 24-hour period.
Right. Absolutely. That's like a life-changing moment. Yeah. What we call.
Was your father there?
Yeah.
What did he say to you at the end of it all?
He said, "You did a good job," he said. He patted on my back, as usual. He said, "Good job."
So tell me now what we're going to hear appropriately.
Yeah. So now we're going to hear the opening movement of the Tchaikovsky Piano Concerto No. 1 in B-flat major and played by Van Cliburn. And somehow that piece, that Tchaikovsky concerto, opens many great pianists' career, including also Horowitz, for example, when he played with Toscanini. And not only he played with Toscanini, and then he also married Toscanini's daughter. So this piece became a kind of a bridge.
Thank you.
the opening of Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1 in B-flat major, played by Van Cliburn with the RCA Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Kirill Kandashian. When you were playing that, age 17 in Chicago, and that momentous night, Lang Lang, is it true that as you sat down you were channeling the energies of Michael Jordan, the basketball player, and imagining him doing a perfect slam dunk?
Absolutely, because Michael Jordan was a very inspirational figure. I got so much inspiration from his very creative playing and his signature movement. and here we go, Chicago.
It's true, of course, when you say things like that, that you do shake things up and you do shake people up, because that's not what a classical musician is supposed to be thinking of. Supposed to be thinking of the great artistry and channeling the composer, is he not? He's not thinking about some guy doing a slam dunk.
Right, I mean, that's true. But when you're 17 years old, I think it's pretty cool to think a little bit about sports. Obviously, we do put ourselves most time into researching, analyzing, you know, behind the notes, in the score.
Right.
But we should bring other interest into music as well.
You are then, of course, this world-class musician. You are also, though, a global brand, too. Your very name, Lang Lang, is trademarked, is that right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, and you've got deals with, I'm looking down the list here, Adidas, Versace, and they go on and on and on. I mean, that is very much in the mould of the sports stars of our age. Is Versace still dressing you?
Yes, they are. Right. They are, yeah.
Do they dress you for day-to-day or they dress you just for concerts?
No, just for concert. Okay. Yeah, just for concert.
Because you look very sharp today. You're wearing that sort of blue silk shirt, a shiny belt, a patent brogues, which I've never seen before. Do you dress yourself or do you have a stylist?
I mean, normally when I go to Milan, that's a very happy time, as you know.
Okay. Anyway, sorry, I'm sidetracking.
No, don't worry.
So the sponsorship.
Yeah, the sponsorship. I think it's pretty interesting that many brands today are interested in supporting classical music and to support our initiatives, like my foundations, to helping children, you know, the providing scholarships to the very talented children. So I got very lucky with many sponsors that they are interested to inspire the next generation for music studies.
In these economic times, of course, artists, like everybody else, have to be realistic about the economic situation. And if private funding can be brought into the arts, then most people would say that's a good thing. Do you worry, though, about the criticism that might come from the more traditional areas of the artistic establishment, who would say, well, you have to be mindful of not compromising your artistry, or that you just become like a Formula One car, you know, a sort of walking billboard for all these brands.
But in the end, I am not a Formula One driver. I am a classical musician. So that's why I'm not worried about it. Because in the end, I don't become a pop star. I mean, I am what I am, which is playing Beethoven. But you can't always depend on only support from government or only support from the concert hall. That resource is wonderful, but it's limited.
Let's have some more music now, Lang Lang. What are we going to hear next?
Talking about dreams, we should listen to the first inspiration from the Tom and Jerry cartoon, the Cat's Concerto. This is the great Vladimir Horowitz version, playing part of the Liszt Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2.
Vladimir Horowitz playing part of the Hungarian Rhapsody No. 2 by Liszt. You should explain, Lang Lang, that going into that you said the Tom and Jerry music. What did you mean, the Tom and Jerry music?
Yeah, it's a very famous episode. Tom and Jerry is playing together on this piece. It was the first inspiration for me to start loving classical music.
Okay.
And that's the moment. But that time I didn't know who Horowitz or who Liszt was, but obviously I know who Tom was.
It was great to watch you listening to that piece of music. At one point you put your head in your hands there and you said, oh my God, every time I listen to that I hear new notes. How did he do that? How did he do that?
Yeah, I mean, Horowitz is just a piano god. And every time you hear what he does, it's just... it's just fabulous.
There are, of course, along with your many fans, I don't know if you read the critics, but there have been critics who've said, you know, there's too much of the pounding from you, that there's too much of the histrionics. Do you take note of your critics, or is that for other people to judge?
It's actually quite nice that people writing about me, whether it's a good review or bad reviews, the intention is good, you know. I'm still quite young, and there are a lot of things that I'm trying to work out and to improve.
Can I ask you about that? Because I've read that there are times when we know about your schedule, you've told us about that, the amount of performances you give. Mm-hmm. There are times when you choose to retreat, even if it's just for a matter of a few days at a time. You go to Berlin, is that right?
And
you study with Barenboim. And
yes.
So tell me about those times.
It's very important to cool down and to have a real concentrated time to learn new symphonies, new operas, and how I'm going to develop as a musician.
That was an intriguing little phrase you used there. You said to cool down.
Mm-hmm.
Do you worry about that? Do you think that for you, particularly as a player, it's important that sometimes you just take a breath?
Absolutely. And
yes.
This summer I took first ever summer holiday.
First ever?
Yeah. I realized life is not just working and playing concert, but also to have some free time and to be with family and friends. And for example, I went back hometown, Shenyang, and I met my grandmother. And she's now 86, but I haven't seen her in 5 years.
Right.
So it was, for me, it was a very, very emotional.
Sometimes it's easier to stay on the hamster wheel than it is to get off it. Because when you get off it, suddenly everything's a bit disorientated.
It's fine.
It was fine?
I think you must get off in order to be a normal human being. We can't always on the spotlight every day. You just can't do that.
More music. What's your penultimate track?
I like to bring everyone to China a little bit. And for Chinese, this is the even more famous than the national anthem. It's called the Yellow River Cantata. And what you're going to hear is a movement played actually by me. I really enjoyed it, the beginning of the bamboo flute songs. It's really beautiful.
From the Yellow River Piano Concerto, that was The Yellow River in Ross, played by My Castaway with the China Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Long Yu. I wanted to ask you, Lang Lang, we've heard about your early life in China and how close you were and are to your parents and indeed visiting your grandmother only a little while ago. But you live in New York. You're a global citizen. Do you feel sometimes that you're not one thing or the other, that you're not quite settled in Western culture and yet you're not entirely steeped in China and the way that the people there live now?
Yeah, I mean, in a way, I like it because for me, there are a lot of incredible things in Western culture that China doesn't have. And in the same time, there are many great Chinese traditions great philosophy and the most beautiful poems nobody knows in the West. So in a way that, you know, if you combine Shakespeare to Confucius, there's something happens. There's something new comes out. For me, it's a good advantage that I can learn a lot of great things from different culture.
Well, we maybe find out more about that in a second. For now, though, you can tell me about the final disc that we're going to hear today. What is it?
Yeah, the final disc is George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue.
And why have you chosen this?
My second part of my studies was actually in America, and now I live in New York. And also, Leonard Bernstein is also an absolute musical idol for me. And so here is he's actually playing and conduct. He's a real genius, and Gershwin is also a real genius. So two geniuses combined, they are the best representative of American classical music.
George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, played by Leonard Bernstein with the Columbia Symphony Orchestra. So, Lang Lang, we come to the point where before I cast you away, I'm going to give you the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare, and you may take a book of your own. What would you like to take to the island?
If I only take one, I will take the Analects of Confucius.
Right, you may have that. And you're allowed a luxury. What's your luxury going to be?
I will bring a nice pillow.
Okay, yeah. Nice big feather pillow.
Right.
Okay, I'll even give you two pillows then. I am amazed that you will live without a piano. Will you manage to live without a piano?
I probably will draw a keyboard on the sand and practice with my brain.
Okay. And if you had to choose just one piece of music, which one disc would you choose?
That's a very, very hard choice, but... I will take the piano god, Vladimir Horowitz.
It's yours. Lang Lang, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you so much, Christine.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.